Last week, we talked a little about God's call to be boundary walkers. This week, we get to talk a little bit about God's call to us to be bearers of hope. The reading from the Torah is from Exodus chapter 1, verse 8, through chapter 2, verse 10. Now a new king came to power in Egypt who didn't know Joseph. He said to his people, "The Israelite people are now larger in number and stronger than we are. Come on, let's be smart and deal with them. Otherwise, they will only grow in number. And if war breaks out, they will join our enemies and fight against us and then escape from the land." So as a result, the Egyptians put foremen of forced work gangs over the Israelites to harass them with hard work. They had to build storage cities named Pithom and Ramses for Pharaoh. But the more the Israelite people were oppressed, the more they grew and spread. So much so that the Egyptians started to look at the Israelites with disgust and dread. So the Egyptians enslaved the Israelites. They made their lives miserable with hard labor, making mortar and bricks, doing field work, and by forcing them to do all kinds of other cruel work. The king of Egypt spoke to two Hebrew midwives named Shiphrah and Puah, and he said, "When you are helping the Hebrew women give birth and you see a baby being born, if it's a boy, kill him, but if it's a girl, you can let her live." Now the two midwives respected God, so they did not obey the Egyptian king's order. Instead, they let the baby boys live. So the king of Egypt called the two midwives and said to them, "Why are you doing this? Why are you letting the baby boys live?" And the two midwives said to Pharaoh, "Because Hebrew women aren't like Egyptian women. They're much stronger and give birth before any of the midwives can get to them." So God treated the midwives well, and the people kept on multiplying and becoming very strong. And because the midwives respected God, God gave them households of their own. Then Pharaoh gave an order to all his people. "Throw every baby boy born to the Hebrews into the Nile, but you can let all the girls live." Now a man from Levi's household married a Levite woman. The woman became pregnant and gave birth to a son. She saw that the baby was healthy and beautiful, so she hid him for 3 months. When she couldn't hide him any longer, she took a reed basket and sealed it up with black tar. She put the child in the basket and set the basket among the reeds at the riverbank. The baby's older sister stood watch nearby to see what would happen. Now Pharaoh's daughter came down to bathe in the river. While her women servants walked beside the river, she saw the basket among the reeds, and she sent one of her servants to bring it to her. When she opened the basket, she saw the child. The boy was crying, and she felt sorry for him. She said, "This must be one of the Hebrews' children." Then the baby's sister said to Pharaoh's daughter, "Would you like me to go and find one of the Hebrew women to nurse the child for you?" Pharaoh's daughter agreed, "Yes, do that." So the girl went and called the child's mother. Pharaoh's daughter said to her, "Take this child and nurse it for me, and I'll pay you for your work." So the woman took the child and nursed it. After the child had grown up, the woman brought him back to Pharaoh's daughter, who adopted him as her son. She named him Moses because she said, "I pulled him out of the water." This uncomfortable word is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. bearers of hope, those who give birth to hope. Hold on to that idea. For years and years and years, Israelite people had been living in Egypt. For years and years and years, they had worked first as valued workers, later as slaves, hard workers whose own efforts kept Egypt going. And it was all good. It was all really pretty good until the king got scared. It was all good until the king's fear got out of control. You see, the king was afraid that these foreign workers would grow to outnumber his Egyptian people. The king was afraid that these foreign workers would rise up and overpower his Egyptian people. The king was afraid that the very people whose daily work sustained his country would flip the tables, resulting in some sort of new Egypt ruled by Israelites who might actually enslave Egyptians. It was all well and good until the king got scared. But he was scared, and so the frightened king could only think of one option: increase oppression and limit reproduction. Make the Israelites' lives as miserable as possible and literally kill children, the male children, in order to eliminate the next generation. Fear can instigate horrendous behavior. Then and now. So the edict was announced and enforced. When you are helping the Hebrew women give birth, if it's a boy, kill him. But if it's a girl, let her live. Announced and enforced, except when it wasn't. Except when two particular midwives, Shipra and Puah, dedicated themselves not to the king's purposes, but to God's purposes. Shipra and Puah decided to proactively oppose Pharaoh's fear-based evil plan. They sought out to save as many baby boys as they could. And when questioned about why these boys were allowed to live, they bravely and defiantly proclaimed, "Because Hebrew women are stronger than Egyptian women. They give birth before we get there." Truthful? Not exactly. Faithful? Absolutely. The baby we now call Moses was one such saved baby, saved by the midwives and hidden by his mother. Moses' mother concealed him for 3 months until covering his presence became impossible, at which point she actually did the impossible. She laid him in a basket and placed him in the Nile, that famous river, the giver of fertility and water and growth to the country of Egypt. She entrusted the result of her fertility to the family of reeds along the bank of life. The midwife saved him. His mother saved him. And now Moses needed help. Help that came in the form of Pharaoh's daughter and Moses' big sister and Pharaoh's daughter's servant. Pharaoh's daughter noticed the basket and noticed the baby and sent her servant to retrieve it. The boy was crying and she felt sorry for him. Motherly feelings for a helpless baby. His ethnicity, remember, she actually said in the text, this must be one of the Hebrews' children. His ethnicity does not stop her. She wants this child. She wants this child to live and to grow and to thrive. And then with courage and initiative beyond her years, Moses' sister approaches. She is so clever. She is so clever. She approaches and offers to find a wet nurse for the baby, someone to nurse the baby. I wonder who she has in mind. Pharaoh's daughter jumps at this opportunity, and Miriam runs to get her mother, Moses' mother. The baby entrusted to the family of reeds on the bank of the Nile, the famous river of life, is returned, re-entrusted to the one who conceived and birthed it. The baby will live. And the irony, don't miss the irony here, friends. The irony lies in the fact that the princess herself has her father's future opponent, you with me? Raised through his own palace. The one who will take him down, growing up under his own roof. 6 hope bearers. 6 bearers of hope. 6 women who work together to care for a child that is actually not supposed to live, who break down boundaries of language and ethnicity and religion and social status in order to save a life, whose actions resulted in renewed hope for the entire Hebrew people. 6 women who do the very thing God calls each of us to do, to work together to overcome the boundaries that long divide us, to be midwives, mothers, fathers, sisters, brothers, princesses, princesses, servants, who assist in labor, who give birth, who nurture and help, who resist the force of fear, who harness the courage to overcome obstacles, who take on unusual and unpopular responsibilities, who embrace the monumental task of bearing hope in God's world, who step up to humbly accept the name bearers of hope in a world so often fraught with desolation and despair, for people too often marked by bruised spirits and broken promises. I want to close today with the poem that's actually printed on the back of your order of service. It's a poem about midwives, about possibility, about bearing, about giving birth to hope. There is always the possibility of another way. Always the possibility of changing theology, thinking, conditioning. Always the possibility of taking cooperation seriously, of sharing food, knowing there will be enough to go round. There is always the possibility of rejecting violence totally, of not buying the war game or the toy gun. Always the possibility that one day plastic models in cornflakes packets will not be destroyers, but peacemakers. There's always the possibility of responding creatively, trusting vulnerability, smallness, gentleness, tiny signs of new life. There is always the possibility of not obeying orders, of being midwives at the risky birth of hope. Thanks be to God.